We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Bengals Beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Tyler Dragon. And this week I texted my friend Tyler and I said, I think we should do a podcast. You know, we work in the sports department. I almost call it the toy department, where we get to talk about the fun things like contracts and even those bad football seasons. But there's a lot going on in the world. And I had told Tyler, let's record the podcast on Monday. Meaning next Monday, I stopped myself because I look around the world, I look on social media, I watch the news every day, and there's so much going on right now. There is a connection to the sports world, and we're going to get to that in just a moment, but I want to talk to my friend Tyler because I see eyes starting to open up. Me personally, I don't want to be ignorant on the subject because I'll be completely honest with you. One of my best friends is a Black girl. I FaceTime her daily. I talk to her daily. And I never thought about it. I don't think about things that are hard for me or hard for her and not hard for me. So I just wanted to bring this conversation to light on the sports podcast because it shouldn't be something that we ignore. Tyler, I'm bringing you in so I don't continue to ramble, but how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good given the circumstances with everything going around in this country, with the coronavirus pandemic to the racism pandemic. And you know, it's been a tough week for I would say all of us, especially minorities and myself being African-American, because you know, this isn't a new problem. This is a problem that has been around for centuries. And, you know, when you see a Black person being, you know, wrongfully killed by the police, that's something that, sadly, we have become almost numb to because we've seen it every day. And me personally, I've had, you know, I've been stopped by the police for no reason at all. So it's not a new problem, and it's something that we need to address immediately. And, you know, I don't want to ramble a lot, but I just want to – this podcast, like you said, we want to have a conversation. And you did say that, you know, it's about learning. And it's about learning for everybody. So – I want to tell you a little bit about myself before I get into how I feel about this whole situation. So I was a political science major in college. I did not major in broadcast journalism or journalism. My major was political science. I almost went to law school, and I'm also a history buff. In fact, I watched the Ulysses S. Grant documentary on the History Channel last week. He's from Ohio, by the way. Highly recommend the documentary. It was very well done. I'm giving you a little bit of that background to say I'm a very socially conscious person, and I'm in tune with how history affects us today. Racism has been a problem here for over 400 years. In 1619, the first slaves were brought to this country in Virginia. And slavery wasn't abolished until 1865. Then you had Reconstruction. That was nixed when Lincoln got assassinated. Then you had segregation, Jim Crow, until the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So people would be completely tone deaf if they believe that was the official end of racism, or even when Barack Obama was elected president in 2008. The residual effects of slavery still plague this country through systemic racism, and you see it in racial disparities in wealth, income, criminal justice system, employment, housing. I can go on to healthcare, political power, education. I can go on and on. At some point, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, all people need to have an honest dialogue and enact change. And I think personally, it should be incumbent upon everyone to kill racism. We can start by having more diversity in government and the police force and in all positions of power and influence. And I've seen all the protests across the country since George Floyd's murder, and those crowds are very diverse. That is a very positive sign too. At the same time, I hope all those protesters bring that same energy to the polls, because again, we need people in position of power who want to end systemic racism. And you know, that is my thoughts on that. I know I rambled a little bit, but that is my feeling on this whole situation.
You talked about it being diverse, and I think a lot of people, I know you see it, I see it, where they'll say all lives matter, not just Black lives matter. And I think you brought up a good point. This isn't a white or Black thing. This is, everyone should be against racism. This is a very serious matter. We should all feel like that is wrong. And it's starting to bring light to a lot of people. I think you're seeing it, I'm seeing it. People are speaking up who have been quiet, who may have not said much when what we saw with Colin Kaepernick during the peaceful, you know, demonstration that he did during the national anthem. And you don't have to agree with it. People don't have to agree with it. But what he did was try to be peaceful. And he was trying to bring awareness to what he was seeing. And that hasn't changed. I mean, what we saw, the video, I honestly don't even want to give this cop any airtime, because it was murder, what we saw. And fortunately, actually, there's video, Tyler. This is a good thing to have technology. Some people want to bash technology sometimes in the world we live in. I am grateful and thankful we have technology for one of those reasons, that we were able to see that and hopefully give his name some justice. I know there are things that don't get caught on camera and we don't see, but for him to see that, for us to, for other people to be able to open their eyes. And for me personally, I can feel and know what's right and wrong. I mean, I grew up in a family where it was always treat people how you want to be treated. And I've always treated people that way. But we can't all say that that's how we treat each other. And there's nothing wrong with saying that everyone should have equal rights and everyone should be treated fairly. Somebody actually brought up a good point the other day. They're saying we just, giving someone else equal rights doesn't mean that you get less of them. I mean, this isn't pizza. Everyone gets to get treated. Everyone should get treated equally. And I'm hoping, and as you mentioned, you see the peaceful protest. And honestly, like, if you go to the Inquirer site right now and I look at the photos daily, because there's more protests going on in Cincinnati, and I see those photos of the younger generation, the little girls and boys out there with their parents. And I think it's strong. I think you should have them there. They should see this. And they have their little fist up, and it's Black, it's white, it's people from just all kinds of different cultures who are out there. And it's not just the United States. It was all 50 states, but it was also around the country. And people want to see change. And you mentioned that, Tyler. You said, you know, those people that are out there at the protests, you know, hopefully this continues and the conversation continues and we continue to see something different. And I'm gonna bring a little social media connection in here. And I know you're not on Instagram right now, but you probably saw it on the news and on Twitter, where a lot of people were putting that black square on Tuesday saying Blackout Tuesday. I had the blackout square on my Instagram and I put it on there because I was like, oh yes, I have to do this. I want people to know that, like, I'm against this. This is not okay. I show that I am, everyone should have equal rights. And this is what has happened in our country isn't fair and it needs to change. And I put it on there and I thought to myself, are you putting the black square on there to show people like, look at me, look what I'm doing? Or what are you doing? Like, are you doing more? Or are you just putting a square out there to say you did the square? I deleted the square and I went to the websites. I went to all the websites where it said what you can do to help. And I donated. And then I donated again yesterday morning. Because I'm not going to just post something on my social media if I'm not doing more. That's not helpful. Going to protests is awesome and amazing. And the messages are getting out there. And I love that people are doing that. But do more. 2 weeks from now, let's don't look back at that Blackout Tuesday and be like, oh, I'm glad I did that. But what else has happened in the last 2 weeks? I think what we need to see in the United States is continued conversation and injustice for a lot of people, for more than just George Floyd, for other people who have lost their lives, who maybe there wasn't a camera there for the evidence, for Black lives to be treated equally. And I want to say, and for how sometimes I just want to log out of social media because it can be hard on any news day, or just Twitter alone. I mean, it can wear you out, but I'm really grateful for it right now because I feel like a lot of messages have been delivered. And I feel like more people who have been quiet have spoken up. And I mean, that's what I'm seeing, Tyler. What are you seeing out there on social media?
Yeah, it is a positive sign that there are people speaking up, but I do feel some people are just saying something to say something. Drew Brees is a prime example.
Wow.
But it's all about, I say this in just life in general. I'm all about actions. People can talk the talk all they want. I don't care in what form or fashion, but if you don't have actions behind your words, then they ring hollow. So posting on social media and saying Black Lives Matter or saying, you know, we want to end racism or inequality, that's fine and dandy and all. But I've seen this movie before. We've seen this movie before. This is not, like I said, a new problem. So it's about, okay, you can say that, but how do we as a people and as a society eradicate racism? And in my opinion, that starts with, you know, having these honest conversations and then enforcing change in laws, enforcing change in police practices and behaviors, and enforcing change with the people who we elect in office. And that's from the city level to the state level to the federal level. So it's all about coming together as a society and treating everyone like your parents did taught you at a young age, like my parents taught me at a young age, that, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. And everybody is equal. And you shouldn't treat somebody different just because of the pigmentation in their skin. We all bleed the same way. We're all human at the end of the day. And yes, I've, as a Black man, I've had different experiences than, you know, as you, but we're still human. And I want to treat you well, and you want to treat me well, and you want me to have equality and equal rights, and I want you to have equality and equal rights. And it shouldn't matter if you're Black, white, Hispanic, Asian. It should all about be the content of your character, like Dr. Martin Luther King said. Judge me from that and not the color of my skin. And people need to come to grips with that and really look in the mirror if they have a racist bone in their body or racist views. They need to really look themselves in the mirror and ask, you know, why do I not like Hispanic people? Or why do I not like Asians? Or why do I not like Black people? And then, you know, have those honest moments and figure out what is causing that hatred in your heart. Because if we don't have these honest conversations, one with yourselves and then with other people, then this problem is going to continue and continue and continue. And I hope this is a watershed moment in society, because, you know, you would hate for this to keep on happening over and over again, because it's been a series of events in 2020. This isn't just an isolated incident. We still have the Ahmaud Arbery shooting that happened in February. So it's not new news. This is a problem that has plagued our country for, like I said, centuries. And it is incumbent upon all of us to kill racism and get better.
You mentioned conversation, and I think that's extremely important, because I think people who, like myself, I am a privileged person, and I know that, but I'm still learning. And by learning, I want to know more of how others may feel, that I don't know what they're going through. Like I mentioned earlier, one of my best friends is a Black girl. And for me personally, I never put two and three together. I know she's my favorite person. Like, I text her all the time. She makes me laugh. I go to her for advice. But the other day when I saw something on social media where someone said, make sure you're listening and make sure you're learning. And so I was just making dinner on Tuesday night, and I FaceTimed her, and I was like, look, we started talking about just some random stuff. I had zero to do with what was going on during the news, but I knew it was a hard week for her too. So I said to her, I'm like, look, this is kind of a tough thing to bring up, but I want to know, and I've never asked you about it, obviously, but like, when did you know that you were treated differently? And she didn't, you know, think twice about it. She was like, oh, I remember. And she said, you know, I grew up in a white community. My dad was running for office. So she's like, my family didn't really shelter me or anything like that. But she said, I knew we were different when I asked my mom why we weren't going to the pool in our community that was just right down the road, why we had to drive an extra 10 to 15 minutes to go to another pool. And later she had told me, well, those people there, this is where other Black people are at this pool. So those people, you might look at us differently. And she's like, mom, we're just going to the pool. Like, I just want to go swimming. I want to go, my friends are there. My friends from this community are at that pool. And like, she's like, I know, I put two and two together. And I'm like, we're different. And I feel like everybody has one of those stories where that's when you knew things were different. And not to say that that has changed. I mean, I asked her, I'm like, do you feel like you had to work harder? Do you feel like, you know, other things that you may do is you're getting treated differently? And she's like, of course. She's like, I don't like try to bring it up or anything like that. She's like, but I saw that growing up. And that's not okay. Like, those are small things, Tyler, but like, that's not okay. And that's why the conversation, I feel like, and hopefully social media does bring it to light, because I do feel like more people are talking about it. More people are learning. More people are speaking up that you haven't heard from before. That is a good thing. But now it's about changes. And I hope we see those changes.
Yeah, it's about action. People can talk the talk all they want, but if they're not going to have actions behind those words, they mean nothing. And I hope that people finally see the light now. It's never too late. And, you know, you would hate for somebody to have to die in front of everybody's eyes for this to happen and people to finally wake up. But, you know, if this is the event in our lifetime that sparks change, like Emmett Till did for the civil rights movement, then it is there can be some positivity with all this. And, you know, George Floyd can look down upon this all if there's change, and hopefully have a smile on his face, even though you would hate him to die like that. But if his death sparked change, then there can be some positivity in with all this negativity in our world today.
One of the first voices we heard, and of course he has a huge following and an athlete, and he's in Cincinnati, was Joe Burrow. And he was just pretty much saying, like, we need to pay attention to this. We can be a voice. Like us, me, white, a white person can be a voice for the Black community. Things need to change. And I felt like that was huge. That I know it's just a tweet, and there always has to be, you know, you want to see actions behind it. And sometimes we don't see actions because they're not posted on social media or anything like that. They're behind the scenes and they're getting it done. What did you think about Joe Burrow speaking up on his Twitter page?
I actually retweeted him and said a few words. And I feel like Joe Burrow gets it. And that is a good thing. He is socially aware. He understands his privilege, and he also understands his platform, and he uses that to try to enforce change and try to make a difference. We saw that with the soup kitchen, I believe it was in Athens, where you know, he used his platform at the Heisman Trophy speech to raise awareness of kids and underprivileged families where he's from, and that paid dividends. And now this situation, he's using his social media platform to say we need to all wake up and make a difference. And that shows a lot of courage. It takes courage to do that. Not everybody's comfortable with, you know, sticking your neck out and, you know, fighting a problem that has been a problem since 1619. So no matter if you're white, black, or what ethnicity you are, it takes a lot of courage to do that on social media. And now it seems like it's easy for everybody to do it because everybody's like, oh, well, it's a problem. So everybody's hopping on the bandwagon. But people aren't really on the bandwagon. It's disingenuous. A lot of people are just doing it just to do it. But I think Joe Burrow is genuine with his tweets. And like I said, he has actions behind his words. We've seen it already. And it shows a level of maturity. And for the Bengals as an organization, it's a good thing to have a new face of your franchise that is active in the community and wants to make a difference, not only on the football field, but also in the community.
I think he earned a lot of respect from his teammates too, from that tweet. And I'm sure there's more behind the scenes that Joe Burrow is doing for what is happening right now in the world. And his wide receiver, Autumn Tate, it went viral over the weekend in Tampa. He started to clean up after some of the protests over the weekend. And he also was on ESPN radio a couple of days ago, and he said that he attended some of the peaceful protests. And his message is, we all have to just treat each other a little better. I mean, it sounds so crazy, Tyler, because like that shouldn't be hard. Like, it really shouldn't be. We should all be on the same team. And when we're on the same team, like, that is strong. And that's what you're seeing out of a young leader in Auden Tate, who is there. He's going to the peaceful protests. He's also cleaning up the city in Tampa. You have your quarterback in Joe Burrow and just other athletes in general who are speaking out, who want to make a difference. But right now, you look at the NFL. And there were some players who were speaking out about the NFL and maybe what the next steps are for the NFL. When you look at the National Football League right now, what are those next steps? What should the NFL do when you look at what's going on besides social media, besides posting a message on social media?
Well, they did give millions of dollars to the Players Coalition, which helps fight this problem. And I think that that organization should be more active. A lot of the NFL's moves, I hate to say it, but a lot of people believe they're disingenuous, because at the same time that, you know, you're having these statements, you also blackball Colin Kaepernick for being the first person to take a knee and, you know, raise awareness in this problem, being the very first person to knee in 2016. So I wrote an article about it. I know I got a lot of feedback, both the people who disagreed with me and people who agreed with me. They were in my inbox and in my mentions. But sure. Also, even if they brought him back, and I'm not saying just give him a job, but just give him a fair tryout. And a fair tryout. The one in Atlanta was not a fair tryout. That was a botched attempt. It was disingenuous. That was not a real NFL tryout. Give them a fair opportunity to make an NFL squad, and also continue to pump money into the Players Coalition and have ads of the Players Coalition during commercials. Here's how you can contribute. Here's how you can get involved. The NFL has the biggest sports platform in the world, pretty much. So they also have a responsibility, especially when over 70% of the players are black. And those players, their families are affected by this tremendously. So, yeah, white, black, all the players in the NFL should want to try to solve this problem. And that is, in my opinion, continue to pump out money to the Players Coalition. The Players Coalition should be not only in NFL cities, but also in the smaller cities, and contribute to the communities and give Colin Kaepernick a fair opportunity to make an NFL team. And if he doesn't make it, that's fine. He doesn't make it. But it's disingenuous to say, okay, yes, this is a problem. And, you know, we always knew this was a problem. But the guy who was the first one to say, hey, I am going to take a knee during the national anthem because I'm tired of systemic racism and police brutality. And for him to be out of the league for all these years is ridiculous, quite frankly, because he was the person who was the very first to raise awareness to this problem in the NFL, I'll say, in the NFL. And the NFL pretty much punished him for it by ostracizing him out of the league.
With more players speaking up, I feel like, and again, it's such a bizarre offseason with what we're dealing with COVID, and they probably won't be back to the facility as a team until July training camp. I feel like more now than ever would be a chance for Colin to be back in the NFL. And I agree with you. If you give him a tryout and he doesn't fit it, like it didn't, like, kind of rusty, or I don't know, man, then it doesn't work. But do you feel like more than ever, like right now, with everything we're seeing, with everyone kind of all eyes on what is happening in the United States right now? And look, this, like you said, this isn't new. This stuff has been happening, obviously. But more people are speaking up and more people are trying to make a difference. And we're seeing all of the peaceful protests around the United States. Do you feel more now than ever that he would probably get a tryout with an NFL team?
Honestly, I'm not optimistic. I'm pessimistic. just because there are still a lot of fans who refuse to accept and refuse to acknowledge that he was not disrespecting the military. He was not disrespecting the flag. And he was simply protesting against racial injustice and systematic racism. And despite that, there are many fans who just view him as a bad human being. And it's blasphemy and it's crazy to me. But there are a lot of fans who think that. They were in my inbox when I wrote my column. They were in my mentions. And I'm not going to argue with, you know, people who have that type of mindset, because they, quite frankly, are part of the problem. And I hope the NFL does give them a chance, but it's been years. He hasn't played. His last game was January 1st, 2017. And for him to be out of the league that long, and then you have a certain portion of your fan base that it would be upset for strange and racist, quite frankly, reasons, is why NFL teams are hesitant to give him an opportunity. If I was an owner, I would give him an opportunity. I would give him a fair chance. What kind of message would it be if the Minnesota Vikings gave him a tryout after all that this happened? Or even the Atlanta Falcons, who are – Atlanta's right up the street from where Ahmaud Arbery got murdered. But that would send a positive message to not only the NFL community, but the country, that what Kaepernick did was a worthy and honorable gesture, and he was doing what's right for humanity. I hope he gets a chance. I want him to get a chance, but if he doesn't, I sadly would not be surprised.
I think right now, and we've talked about it plenty on this podcast already, but I think now it more than ever, it's extremely important for the NFL to continue to do what we're seeing out there in the United States right now, continuing the conversation and more teams opening up about it, about everyone, again, should be treated equally. And what is happening right now has to stop. And it at least has to, this can't just be over in 2 weeks and we move on to the next thing. We have to continue this communication and talking about it. And I just appreciate you being honest about that. I know we're gonna hit on a few football things that are happening right now, but it's one of those things where you're honest in conversation, and it's not uncomfortable, because this stuff should be talked about, and we should be doing more than just posting about it on social media and learning, and can just an open dialogue is a difference maker. And it's almost step one right now, Tyler, with what's happening.
Well, and as my co-host, I am proud of you to be willing to talk about this conversation, because I know it's not an easy conversation, and it's not a easy topic. So that shows a lot about your character and your personality and your heart, that you are willing and open to have a dialogue about this topic, because not everybody is willing to do that. And we're using our platform, no matter how big or small, to talk about a subject that affects us all. And it's commendable that you would be willing to do that in this show with me.
We'll continue to do that. As you mentioned, this is a platform where we're going to talk about what is happening. And I honestly feel like we needed to talk about that before we move on to anything in the sports world right now. And, you know, it's crazy because, Tyler, it's the first week of June. And honestly, I don't even know where the last 3 months went, but it's the first week of June, and there's a chance that we might, you and I, might witness real NFL football practices next month. What do you think the chances are this time around?
Well, the NFL's extended their virtual offseason till midway through June. And the offseason program has to end by June 26th. So I don't...
You're not optimistic about
it. I'm not optimistic that there are going to be practices on the field by June 26th. I am more optimistic, though, that there will be a training camp. So that is good news because, I mean, the NFL sees the NBA coming back in late July. The MLS is coming back. Then overseas, the English Premier League and all these other soccer leagues, they are returning to play this month. So that all is a positive sign. And I hope we can get a handle of this coronavirus pandemic, or at least stabilize it in a way where we can return to sports in a safe way. For fans, I'm not optimistic that there'll be fans in the stands. Paul Brown Stadium, week one, I would be shocked if there were fans. Now, maybe a percentage of fans, but I don't think there are going to be fans in the stands for a while until there's a vaccine. But there will be football on TV. We have our fingers crossed, and it's looking like sports are coming back. Slowly but surely, we're going to get sports back.
And with that memo today that the coaches can return to Paul Brown Stadium, what does that do? I mean, at the moment, like you mentioned, I don't feel like there's any reason for the players to get back to Paul Brown Stadium until July training camp. There's just no reason for it anyways. I think it's smart that the NFL is just extending their virtual offseason. The OTAs are going to be over. OTAs, minicamp, all that's going to be over by in a couple weeks. So it would be pointless. But for the coaches, Tyler, is that any advantage, not any advantage for any NFL team if they all get to go back, but is that helpful for them to just kind of get back into the system, get back into the same room versus all of the virtual meetings they're having? I mean, some coaches might be having more meetings than they ever have had before with what's going on in the virtual offseason. Is it good that coaches can return without players, or does it really mean anything right now?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I did talk to Bengals offense coordinator Brian Callahan earlier this week, and he pretty much said it's not going to change much. He won't have his family bugging him during the day when he's trying to work, and he'll be around coaches in person. So, I mean, that obviously helps. You don't have to rely on Zoom and technology to speak to coaches. But as far as communicating with the players, that doesn't change. You're still going to have your Zoom conference calls and communicate with players that way. But you have your facility and all the things that come with that. So that, in a sense, is a good thing that they get to be in a team facility. They can have Zoom conference calls and show their whiteboards and, you know, show all the materials and all the things that they have in their the Bengals facility. So in that sense, it's a positive thing. And, of course, it shows that the NFL is in their next phase of returning. So that's great for us fans, us sports reporters, and everybody else who loves sports, because that shows that they're closer to actual practices and playing football games down the line. But from a coaching standpoint, it does not change much because they're still virtually meeting with the players, but they do get to have face-to-face communication with the coaching staff.
I don't know what training camp will look like for us as far as coverage or where we're going to be allowed to be. Normally, we're really, really far back from where the players are, but I've never looked more forward to standing out in 100-degree heat to watch a football practice than I have this year. Like, I really hope that that happens. I hope that we're all at training camp and we're watching from afar at a safely location. But I'm hoping that the phases continue as we get into the rest of the summer months. You mentioned Brian Callahan. And I actually want to go back to a little bit to quarterback Joe Burrow. Auden Tate actually mentioned it yesterday. He said he's really vocal in meetings. He's speaking up when they're having these virtual offseason meetings. And I'll tell you right now, Tyler, a lot of fans, they love them some vocal players. And Auden is already seeing that in the confidence he's seeing out of Burrow just on the computer alone. They haven't met yet, and that's to be determined. I know he wants to get together with some of his receivers, and that could happen in June or July. We'll see what happens as the next couple weeks come about after minicamp and all of that is over, if they all do meet up in Cincinnati or not. I have a feeling they will before training camp. But what's Brian Callahan saying about his quarterback?
He had great things to say about Burrow. Like Auden, he said that he's been active in meetings, vocal. He's attentive, wants to learn, wants to get better. He says that he's very engaged and he's eager to get back in the football field and start building chemistry with his teammates, throwing the football and just being in the huddle. But he's very excited thus far of what he's seen with Joe Burrow. And then he mentioned the other quarterbacks too, Jake Delagala and Ryan Finley. He said they have all been great in the meetings, and they really stuck to the basics and have been, you know, real particular in how they're teaching the young quarterbacks. And I thought that was an interesting point that he made to me, because they know that they have the youngest quarterback room in the NFL. So they want to bring them along slowly and also be real particular and just really focus on every single aspect of breaking down plays and terminology and just their development process. And I thought that was that'll be beneficial for Joe Burrow and all the other quarterbacks, because this time you can't be on the field, but the classroom is that much more important now. And they're really emphasizing the classroom work right now because they can't compete out on the field. And they are bringing all three quarterbacks along with a planned approach, and they're prioritizing the very basics and then advancing from there.
Yeah, and it's honestly all about being disciplined right now. I know AJ Green put something on his Instagram story yesterday. He's working out down in Georgia, and it's just getting the workouts in. And, you know, there is a disadvantage with the Cincinnati Bengals right now, because if they don't get to get these reps in with their wide receivers and their quarterbacks, like I mentioned, all that's they want to make that happen, the players do. But if you don't get those extra reps and you're not familiar with each other, and your offense is going to look different, even the defensive pieces that they have added in the offseason. I mean, if you're meeting on the field for the first time in training camp, there's going to be a lot of rust with some of these teams, with some of the younger guys and rookies out there when we get to training camp and preseason.
Yeah. the thing is, though, that's going to affect all teams, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not just Bengals. That's all. The Miami Dolphins have a new quarterback. The Los Angeles Chargers have a new quarterback. And a lot of teams have new wide receivers and new tight ends, new running backs. So building that connection and unfilled work, teams are going to be behind the eight ball in that. And when we see training camp, we'll probably notice the effects of no off-season program on the field. And even during the season, hopefully if the season starts on time, there's going to be some rust and going to be some sloppy play at the beginning, because we've had a unique off-season, to put it mildly. And that goes with all sports. I mean, when the NBA comes back, when soccer comes back, those aren't going to be well-played games to start. I can tell you that. Off top.
I'm looking forward to it, though. I can't wait. I'm going to be a big NBA fan.
Those are going to be some sloppy games to start, because players are going to be rusty. They're going to be somewhat out of shape. And, hey, it's been a crazy time for us all. But it will be good just to have sports back to get us something else to think about, give us something to cheer about, and give us something to just watch that's new content. I feel like we need the Jordan documentary to come back. Let's get part 11, 12, 13, and 14, Washington Wizards version.
I want to know more about the Dream Team. So if they want to go ahead and release that, that could be its own, you know, an extra documentary of the footage that we didn't see on The Last Dance from all of that. I'm sure they have plenty in the vault. We just need my okay. But no, Tyler, thank you so much for joining us on the Bengals Week podcast. I know you have plenty on Cincinnati.com. What's up there?
Yeah, my story and Brian Callahan, who I just alluded to earlier, I have a story about Lou Anarumo, who was a big fan of The Last Dance, by the way, even though he's a Knicks guy. He also was a Jordan fan. And then if you're so inclined to read my piece on Colin Kaepernick, it's a column. You can read that too. So there's a lot on Cincinnati.com that I have published in the last week. So go on, read it. Hopefully learn something new, and hopefully the next time we have this conversation, we're starting to see some changes in our society. Every little bit will help.
Yeah, continue those conversations, and we'll be back in the next couple weeks too, and hopefully more stories prior to training camp. Plenty to come over here on the Bengals Beat Podcast and over on E&Q Sports. You can find us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you so much for joining us and listening on the Bengals Beat Podcast on Cincinnati.com.